This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Coaches, thank you for jumping into the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. To my right, we have the High Performance Coach for the Country Men, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Robbie, Darren, good to see you guys.
And he's gone and spoilt the surprise. But to the left of your radio is the High Performance Coach for the Metro Men, Darren Best. Welcome, Bestie.
Morning, all. It's good to be back in the sweat box.
It is like the surface of the sun in this place. Like, it does not get any warmer, cooler, and we're coming into the summer months. This could spell disaster for the podcast, it'd be fair to say. Could be an outdoor podcast from here on in, and we'll be in a better spot. But we do appreciate all the likes, shares, the ratings, the reviews from the listeners out there, purely to help grow the podcast as much as possible. You can also use the hashtag TalkingSplit, and we'll try and pick up anything from there. If you do want to continue the conversation at any stage, you can get Coops on Twitter via the at
CoachNCB.
You cannot get Bestie on Twitter. He is still on his refusal to enter into social media, and you can get me on at Rob Coulter if you need me. So last week we spoke about how to pick your team, what the processes would be to select the team, amongst other things. Jamboree, we spoke about Women's World Cup. Bestie, did you catch much of the FIBA Women's World Cup?
Yeah, I watched a lot of it. It was obviously pleasing to see high-quality basketball in Australia and then see the Opals do quite well also.
Yep. Favourite coach, favourite player?
Oh, that's a tough one. Put me on the spot here. Favourite player? I actually quite like the American point guard that was playing for, was it Serbia?
Anderson.
Evan Anderson.
Yeah, I thought she was quite good. Favourite coach? It's a difficult one for me, obviously, picking China, but I just liked her demeanour.
Yep.
It was so calm in the timeouts, and it definitely towards the end of that, obviously, heartbreaking game for our group, but I just, her demeanour, she was very calm. That's what it seemed anyway.
Yeah, no, it certainly came across that way, I thought, on TV as well. Like, I think she did a great job. Like, she was a phenomenal coach, I thought. Ex-player, I think, for the Chinese national team as well, off the top of my head. So, phenomenal. Just off-the-cuff questions, I'll just throw you a couple today just to see what we can get your opinions on things. You know, favourite colour?
Yeah, you've got my attention. It's definitely Kawasaki green.
That is not one I saw coming, to be fair. So we are talking about, if you have just picked your team, you're in that magical first week where everyone's really happy because they have a new team. You've got this shiny new toy that you get to do something with, and how are you going to go about it? Because that first week can really make or break your season in a lot of cases. If you get everything right, everything can go fairly smoothly. If you get it wrong, you may be paying for that thing for 6 to 8 months, potentially down the road. So it is going to be a little bit of a difficult spot for everyone. So you've just picked your team. It's been announced on the website. You've dealt with the flood of complaints from parents that have said their child should have been in your team and is not in your team, or the parents that are just rapt that their child has been picked. What happens first? So I think for mine, and I'll sort of throw this one out to you guys first, the first thing you should be looking to do is a parent meeting and just establish some rules. So, Coos, what are the rules that you would be going over in that parent meeting?
It's a great question. And just in preparation, I've just pulled up a PowerPoint that I used, again, from my time as a DOC. So, you know, talking about the parent role. So the parent role, you know, be as dedicated as your child, but be patient, communicate, be understanding, positively promote the program, you know, through social media and our community. You know, love each other, support your child's effort, commitment and sacrifice, be kind and thankful to all those volunteers that invest, celebrate the effort and contribution of every player, find ways to serve by helping when needed, and then talk a lot about the car ride home. Yeah, as we know, and we've spoken about on this pod before, that the number one reason that kids leave sport, they've identified, is the car ride home. So how can we give parents strategies around, you know, what to do on those car rides, whether it's a good game, a bad game, a win or a loss. So I am so proud of you. I love to watch you play. I heard one the other day on another pod where the coach said, are you hungry? So he just tapped right into that aspect of that young person. So, yeah, I think establishing that communication with your parents, help give them strategies, help give them the understanding, the expectations around how to positively impact what's about to happen over the next 11 months is definitely the best place to start.
Yep. Bestie, what have you done in that space? Like, you've been in those roles where you've coached teams, you've been the director of coaching type roles as well. How have you dealt with those first initial meetings?
Well, first of all, I would be concerned if, as a coach, you were being contacted by parents of kids that were unsuccessful to make your team. So if that is happening, you need to talk to your association about their policies, because that in no way should be to you. And I'd be concerned if that was happening for any young coach or any coach, to put that forward. But yeah, at Casey, we had a similar thing to Coops. We actually had a parent induction day. So all the athletes would come in and we would run them through some stuff on court. So there'd be an induction with me, but the parents would actually be inducted also around what was acceptable and what wasn't acceptable during the registration time. When they registered their kids to join the team after the offers went out, they were actually had to agree that they'd read the parent handbook, which was produced, and it was actually a great resource for me as a DOC when people would come to me and I could just say section 6 or section 4, you agreed to this, either you trust us or you don't. And just for those listening out there, section 6 was about playing time, obviously. So, obviously it is, we can joke about it, but it's, it's serious. If you want your child to be part of that club, you're saying that you trust them. If you don't have your child part of that club. And it's exactly the same with our programs here at BV. If you want to sign up for our programs, you're saying that you trust us, and it's somewhat on our terms. Now, we know that we review our stuff every year, same as every club would, but hopefully a lot of those guidelines are club-wide, not necessarily team-wide, because that's where you start to get into problems, particularly when there's siblings and one coach allows one thing and another coach allows another thing. It's like parents in the post-game huddle and all these types of things. We had club-wide rules with that, and yes, although at the beginning there was a little bit of friction, but eventually people just understood that's the way it was, and it was consistent. That's probably the biggest thing. Whatever you do, it's got to be consistent.
Yeah. So when you say section 6 of playing time, what were the rules around playing time at Casey?
Yeah, great question. So the first thing is it was age group dependent, and then also depending on the team that you were in dependent. So the first thing was under 12s, everyone had to play, regardless of whether you were in first team, second team, eighth team, whatever it was. The biggest thing was I just said everyone has to play close to equal playing time over the course of the season. I didn't want coaches there managing, which I've seen some people there with like a spreadsheet trying to manage minutes and all those types of things, which is detrimental to the development of the team and the individuals. And what I said is, if you got a chance to win it in the last 5 minutes, go for it, right? Because the kids want to win, and there's lots of benefits to being in a successful program, right? But not at the expense of someone not playing. So try and get your kids in early, and then obviously in the last 5 minutes, if you can, go for it. As we moved up in age groups, teams 1 and 2 in under 16s, the better players would play the bulk. Obviously, the lower teams, which were development teams, everyone had to play close to equal playing time. Same rules. If you can go for it in the last 5 minutes, go for it. And then under 18s, it was the best players play.
Yep.
That was just the reality of it. And it was known and it was accepted, yeah.
Yep. Any different when you've been in those roles, Coops?
Yeah, just especially because, Darren's, basically in charge of an uber mega club like Casey. And
how many teams were there out there?
44.
44.
Yeah, and I was in more of a boutique club.
Oh, there we go.
In Ballarat. So, as I said last week, it was more about even court time for the first three quarters. Last quarter really determined on performance. So, who'd shown up on that day, who had the great attitude, who was giving you something on the floor, who was exhibiting our values and our standards. And then also, trying to win the game. So, we want to have that understanding of how to play in the clutch, how to win, tight games, all those sorts of things. So, it was organic. It was similar to what Bessie's talking about. I didn't expect someone to have a spreadsheet there or anything like that, and trying to get it down to the minute. It was more about, just can we get everybody on the floor, everybody playing, everybody in love with the game, and then we could build from there.
Yeah, and that is the hardest part too. Like we are in this for the athletes and for the kids. If we stifle their creativity and their love for the game in under 12s, we don't have an under 14s team. We certainly don't have them in 16s, and then we're praying that enough have stuck around in under 18s. So we do have to be really mindful in that court time. And court time, let's face it, is one of the bigger issues that will come up with parents and coaches and players in that space. So it is a really difficult one. But, I mean, you hit on it, Bestie. As long as you're consistent with it, and it has to be season-wide. Like, we all, what if one kid gets in foul trouble, has to sit for a large amount of time? you may not get the opportunity to put them back in, so that's going to cause problems. But can you rectify that next week? Well, yeah. And at some point, to be fair, it's on the kid to stop getting in foul trouble. But, you know, if there's an injury or something like that, if you can make up for that in other weeks, I mean, that should really be the priority, is to try and get it, not even to the point where you're not going to try and win games, but even to the point where you're developing every athlete so that you don't have a best and a worst. You just have a really good team across the board that can work cohesively with each other. So, I mean, it's how would you expect, I mean you had the booklet, Bestie, how was a parent able to approach the court time conversation, or were they just not allowed to?
Yeah, well, obviously, parents do need to have a voice. I want to make that clear. But the first thing was we had some off-bounds times, or off-limit times. So directly after a game, they're definitely not allowed to. And actually during practice, they're not allowed to. That was one of my pet peeves, parents coming in thinking, oh, I'm going to talk to the coach at practice. Hang on a minute.
Yeah. We're here they to practice. Are coaching your child.
Yeah. We're here to practice. And even talking amongst themselves on the sideline during practice, you know, I've been known to yell out to parents and say, shut up. You know, I'm actually trying to coach a kid here and you guys are murmuring about whatever's on TV that week. I go outside and do that. So we would have a process. So we had the first thing, if there was any concern, it wasn't meant to go to the coach. It actually needed to go to the team manager first. So the team manager would then bring it up with the coach. And if the coach felt like they needed some support, they would either come to myself or the age group head coach. So obviously I would then give some strategies around the meeting, and I would always make sure I was present, or at least the age group head coach was present, because it's, you want to make sure your coaches are supported with that type of stuff. And it also goes along with needing to make sure the coaches that you've got have bought into what you're selling as well. So it's very difficult if you don't have that. And that takes some time to establish that stuff. But yeah, the playing time one is difficult. I've said in one of your coaches' clinics that I was running, Rob, that would you sign up for a job without knowing what your KPIs are? And I got a lot of blank looks. And I said, so how many of you have accepted your team this year without knowing what determines success? Mm. And a lot of them have said, oh, well, yeah, well, that's me. And I said, well, you need to go and sort that out, because that determines, like, that can get in front of a lot of your problems straight away. So if you've got an all-bottom age team and it's a development group and you know everyone needs to play and that's the direction from coming from above, maybe when you lose a couple of those games, those parents, you know, that start grumbling about winning or losing, you can say, well, this is my directive.
And that's such a valuable thing, I think, for the junior athletes as well. And, I mean, that's going to keep, one, players in the sport, but two, coaches. You're not going to feel that ridiculous amount of pressure with, oh, we just lost by 30 points, I might be the problem here. It's like, well, hold on. Were we better than when we came in? Yes or no? Well, that's, you know, that's a raffle, to be fair. But the focus is, well, okay, now that we've lost that game, what can we go and rectify or develop or try and work on so that that doesn't happen again when we play them again, or when we play a similar team that you know, presses us the same way or runs the same type of action in the half court, so that we can at least deal with it. And, you know, I feel like we bang on this podcast a fair bit about development over winning. Like, it's nearly a drop on here that we can just sort of play the little speaker on, but it really should be development over winning. And to be fair, there are different times of the year where winning does matter a little bit more, like obviously grading coming up, you know, and we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But, you know, you do want to win your grading games because you want to qualify as early as you possibly can. It's in particular when you're those first and second teams that are trying to make those VC type grades, but you can't win at the expense of developing the athlete, because that, you can lose them so early on.
That's the key point there, Rob. And obviously we do talk about that a lot on the pod. It's not, that we're anti-winning and we don't think that that's part of this. It's, you know, especially at our level, it's elite sport. Like, winning is everything. And VJBL, of course, there's winning aspects to this. And in life, you have winners and losers. So how to win graciously, how to lose, you know, with dignity, how to have respect and integrity in those moments, that this is all really, you know, important part of sport being the vehicle for growth and development of young people. It's the sacrifice. It's the fact that you are sacrificing the development. You are hurting the development of these young people for winning. That's when it becomes a problem, and that's the one that we really want to help coaches understand. We want to try and stamp out of the game as quickly as possible, especially at the youth level.
Yep, without a question. So you opened the door on this one, Bestie, that team managers, such a vital, important role, and can honestly make or break your season, going well or going poorly. Coops, have you had some poor team managers over the years, or have you been blessed that you've plucked out the right parent at the right time?
Yeah, just
no naming and shaming. No, like, we can story time you up if you need to.
No, the good part is, as I'm racking my brain right now, there's no story that jumps to mind about anyone that was a major issue. The ones that come to mind are really more parents that probably just cross the line a little bit around, you know, maybe coaching a bit from that situation, or investing a little bit too heavily in conversations with coach or other parents about, you know, their child, or again, kind of crossing that line of team manager to coach. And obviously we were able to stamp out a lot of that pretty quickly with some meaningful conversations, and then also being able to track it back to like what best he had in place with some, you know, some clear agreements and expectations at the start of the year. So no, lucky that that hasn't been too horrifying over the years.
Did you guys have a process in place to, as a club, say yes or no to a team manager when you're in that space as a director of coaching?
Yeah, we did. I mean, it's really difficult because you're talking about a really thankless job, you know, that washing uniforms or, you know, preparing drink bottles and all different things. And obviously people invest in it in different ways. Some really go to the nth degree and some just kind of phone it in. And by the end of the day, you know, these people are giving up their time to volunteer and to put a whole basketball team ahead of themselves. So you got to be really careful, you know, about what you're doing in that space and making sure that the community sees that you're valuing volunteers and that you're supporting them, you know, no matter what's kind of going on in terms of their development in that role.
Yep. What about you guys, Bestie?
Yeah, we had a process. Our process was head coaches and assistant coaches, they needed to come to us with who they would like to maybe offer. And we had a blacklist, to be honest, of people that weren't allowed to be a team manager. And we would rather that happen before they had offered that person, right? Just avoid some confrontation. And it could be for multiple reasons. Maybe it's they struggle to be the team manager and not to coach. As you guys are aware, there's still, I'm not sure if it's changed just recently or not, but there used to be this situation where you had to pave the team sheet every week and you would collect money and you had to, you know, have some sort of kitty and you need to bank it and all these type of stuff. So for us, people that were perhaps not as diligent with that financial side of it, you know, they might necessarily not be offered a spot again, or if they were, it was under some strict guidelines. Not that anyone was, you know, stealing money or anything. It was more just around maybe they didn't bank it when we needed them to or whatever. And hopefully that has been rectified. I would like to see associations just invoice each other. That would be much easier.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's cashless now on a Friday night at the VJBL level. I got a feeling that might be the case.
But do you still pay with a card?
Yeah, I can't tell you on that one.
I would have thought if I'm playing Coops, we can just send an invoice.
Yeah. But, would Coops pay in the 7 days?
Oh, no, we'd get the debtors at the door.
Yeah,
straight away.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like they would be knocking on that thing early on. But it's a valuable role, as you say. Like, you've got to collect money from parents and types of things. Like, that's an uncomfortable situation to chase up as well. Definitely. If someone hasn't paid you and it's like, hey, this is week 7 and you still haven't given us the $8 or whatever it is that you're being offered. So they have to put out a lot of fires, and in situations where you're potentially dealing with parents and court time and those types of things too. Like, I know this last year, I had an amazing team manager. She was phenomenal. She kept a lot of problems from getting to me, and there were always problems because despite how well you can do things or how poorly you can do things, you're going to have some issues. She stopped a lot of stuff from getting to me. She kept all the parents at bay. She kept all the parents making sure they were paying and scoring and all those types of things. Husband even filmed our games, which was phenomenal, and had a little scoreboard on the... Like, this is ridiculous sort of stuff that you can get done, but... You know, we'd finish our 9:40 game and the film would be uploaded to YouTube with an unlisted link to all the parents by like midnight. It's like, how the hell do you guys do this? But phenomenal. So when I look at the stuff that I had to deal with this year, some stuff not great, but from a team manager perspective, amazing. So it was just one less stressor for me as a coach that I knew every week, oh, is the team sheet going to be paid or is this not going to be really where I need it to be? What if someone gets injured? The one issue we had all year was when she was away for a week, had a different parent team manager who left the blood singlet at an away stadium who had to go and get it. So if that's the worst you deal with,
yeah,
you're in a pretty good spot.
That's good. Yeah. The scoring roster is always, you know, it makes me laugh. And during our parent induction, we actually did a score table, like an unofficial score.
Yeah.
So then that, I don't know how to do it. Was like, oh, I've actually got you down as registered, and you attended this this thing. So
strap in, you're on shot clock.
Yeah,
like it's, and that is, I mean, you will have the parents that all jostle for position. It's like, oh look, I really don't want to do the shot clock tonight. Can I just do the scoreboard or the play HQ or whatever the case may be? Now
shot clock's the best one. It's always confused me why people don't want the shot clock. It's the easiest one, and so when in doubt, hold.
Yeah, well, exactly right. Like you can never get in trouble with that. It's when you reset it when there's 1 second to go, and that's when you're getting strife.
Yep. When in doubt, hold.
Yeah, and look, even if you get it wrong, there is no end of people from the stands happy to let you know when you've screwed something up, and they'll remind you of that consistently. So it is one of those things. The scoring rosters is a difficult one. Filming games, like I think that's worth... like I would recommend every coach film their game, you know, and I mean that can be done on an iPhone or an iPad. You don't need like the $1,800 Sony or anything like that. That can just be done fairly quickly and fairly easily in that space. Who's going to do it? Like I would raise that with the parents to start off with. Like I know this year I thankfully didn't have to bring anything, but I used to look like a pack horse walking into stadiums with like a tripod, a camera, you know, the massive old Moulton whiteboards that you used to put in the case as well, which you could never get in after a game. There was like a little pocket inside the Moulton bags. I could never get the whiteboard back in, especially when I was pissed.
It grew with frustration, Rob.
Didn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't it? Like, I think there was one fateful night where it got ripped because I just had enough. Like, I just needed the whiteboard in that bag.
I've still got that. And I think the more it gets bent from maybe impact, it makes it harder to get into the bag.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Ah, the pitfalls of coaching. But it's all those types of things that are worth bringing up in a parent meeting to start off with, just so that they're aware of how it is. What are your thoughts on communication methods? So if a parent does want to contact you, are you okay with a text? Would you rather a phone call? Would you rather be emailed? Do you want to put it in like a group chat with the parents? Like, Kuz, what would you want in that space?
Firstly, having some guidelines around when. So, you know, if we're saying, you know, it's not Friday night after a game, which most clubs have in place, it's also not first thing Saturday morning. You know, it's
waiting for the clock to tick over. Yeah. It's 8:01 and bang.
Exactly. You know, so laying down some guidelines around when is important. You know, can we wait till Monday? You know, cooler heads are going to prevail. We've got a little bit more time to get into it. For me, I'd prefer to start it with an email, usually because I knew that the first part of the conversation, and whether that was going to be a text, a phone call, an email, whatever it may be, was usually just going to be a parent getting something off their chest. And how much you needed to follow that up usually became quite minimal once they had a chance to be heard. So for me, it was usually an email, allow them to get it down off their chest. That meant I also had a record of it, which was important because we had some issues, some teething issues when I first got there around parent behavior, coach behavior that we had to be mindful of and address. And then after that, then there would be some follow-up, which would usually come with the phone. But more often than not, I'd bring them into the office. So again, it's trying to allow them to be heard, get off their chest what they needed. But then if the follow-up was going to be an in-office meeting, again, the amount of times that would actually happen would be pretty minimal because it was usually... just the fact that they were frustrated. Yeah, maybe it was something just from that game that we could address pretty quickly with the coach if we had to, or the parent. And then, it was squashed pretty quick. So,
yep. What about you, Bestie? What sort of communication methods have you used for your teams in the past? Like, are you an iMessage, a WhatsApp type thing? Like, what do you use in that space?
Yeah, well, we had Team App for all our communication at Casey. And obviously, we've partnered with them now, also with BV for our HB programs. So that was great. So obviously there was records being able to kept. And the biggest thing with that is it was, although it was exclusive to the group, there wasn't exclusive with parents, if that makes sense. Because as you would know, some parents might have their own little group chat going, which is still possible to create. But we didn't endorse or listen to any of those. Everything was through Team App, if that makes sense. So yeah, everything was through Team App. I will say one time I was delivered an anonymous letter once, which was, I wasn't sure if I needed some sort of like hazmat suit or something like that to open it.
Offering you money.
Handwritten in blood.
Yeah. Well,
Sideshow Bob style.
I actually said to my development officer, I'm like, I've just got a duck out. There's a letter there. Would you mind opening it? And then I just shut the door and gave him a call about 10 minutes later. I'm like, are you okay? No, I'm joking.
Yeah, it's ticking for some reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I joke. But literally, yeah, it was an anonymous letter about some grievances that person X had. But yeah, predominantly just all through Team App and same thing. You know, if it got to a in-person meeting, it was generally something that we would want to have that meeting about. Mm. You know, if it was at that point. And I was, you know, I was at a lot of practices and all the games as well. And I felt I had it at a good space where it better be serious for you to come and interrupt me while I'm at practice or watching a game, because I'm working and I'm trying to help the coaches, I'm trying to help the players. So I'm not about to be available for every little thing. And I think that takes time to develop, because your team managers can squash those little things. But if it is anything of a serious nature, we absolutely want to and need to know.
Yeah, exactly. And it is that problems that go away by themselves tend to come back by themselves. Like, deal with it as early as you can possibly deal with it. Like, I know my group this year had a WhatsApp group. So they had one just for the parents, and they had one without us as coaches in it as well, and they could sort out what they needed to sort out. We made it pretty clear, if you've got a problem, don't put it in the parent group. Like, if there's a problem, come to us directly and we'll deal with it directly. And much the same, I'd prefer email, Coops. Like, I think that takes a lot of the sting out of it. If you get a text message and you have to scroll twice to get to the end of the text message, all you're going to do is be annoyed at the end of it. So I would suggest, it's nothing to read a long email, like, especially if either you, like, we get the lengthy ones that anyway. So it is a case of, I'd probably rather that on email, because it just does take a little bit of the sting out of it, I feel, in that space. One thing I did do this year that I'd never done previously is I surveyed the parents at the start of the year to find out what they wanted out of the year.
Interesting.
Just as a, what do you expect from me? Do we have any problems with your child that we need to know of, like learning difficulties, those types of things? How do you want your child to be coached? What are the outcomes you're looking for? Zero responses.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know if they put far too much trust in me at the start. And they said, just do what you want to do. But they genuinely didn't come up with anything. And I don't know if it's just one of those things that they just forgot.
Did you survey them at the end of the year? Have you done that yet?
No. I've stayed clear of them at the end of the year. It's one of those areas.
Has it put you off trying it again?
No, I'd do it again. Mm. Like, I'd do it again. And similar sort of reasons, like section 6, for argument's sake. Look, I asked you at the start, like, is there anything I need to know about? Would you consider, you know, this, this, and this? Or do I need to know about that? I'd probably do it again and just see what came back. And you know, even if you get one response out of 3 years, but that response matters, I think you're still in a pretty good space. But it was more about sort of opening the dialogue with them. It's like, look, I'm not going to be this militant, my way or the highway. If you can't do this, I don't want to hear from your stuff. It's like, oh, no, I'm prepared to have a conversation with you about this sort of stuff. I'll open the first door for you. Because, and you hit on it before, Bestie, like, we have to work with the parents. This is not an us versus them. You know, you're over there, we're over here, don't talk to us. And I've probably made that mistake a lot over my coaching career, for lack of a better term, of that I have been a little bit distant from the parents. And it's like, look, I don't want to talk to you guys because it's not about you, it's about your kid. But knowing what we sort of know now, we have to have a better working relationship with the parents, because if that works well, then you won't have the problems with the child dynamic. And at the end of the day, it is about the athlete. So I think it's worth having a look at. If you're not comfortable doing it, don't do it. You know, I'm certainly not going to encourage you to do something you're not comfortable doing, but it's probably not a bad way to at least open the door, I think, early on. All right, we've got the off-court stuff out of the way. Now, the actual fun stuff that we get to talk about as coaches is the on-court stuff. So when we're talking about it, we picked our teams, we're looking to get done. So how do you define roles in your group, Bestie? Is that something you would be doing with a junior team, or are you just sort of going to let them find their own space, or are you going to sort of dictate that a little bit?
What team am I coaching?
Well, let's say the... Jesus, who's got it? What about... let's say the under-14s. Because that's nice middle ground. 14 ones. Yep. I know you don't take anything with a 2 or lower, Bestie. Like, it's...
Not true. No, and I go back to this because it all just hinges off the back of the club-wide philosophy. What's important? Is it an equal opportunity system that you're doing? Like, all of those types of things. So roles and responsibility is probably more around in 14. For me, it'd be more positioned-based, not necessarily individual-based, if that makes sense. Yep. So I'd be like, right, this is what we're looking for from our bigs. This is... if you have them, this is what we're looking for from our wings, for example. Not necessarily, you know, Rob is our guy. Let's get him the ball all the time.
It's never been said before, yeah. mate. Yeah. Like, it's a fairly safe bet.
Rob is not our guy.
Yeah, yeah. That has been said multiple times.
But, you know, so from that perspective, you know, whereas you start to get up to an under-18s group, and if you, you know, there's some of those conversations can be different. And, you know, the biggest one for me that I can think about recently was with Archer McManaman around, you know, him coming into our group as a bottom age under 18 kid, and he had eyes for the state team. And I just said to him, like, I don't think you're going to make it by being a scorer. You need to be the best screen setter that you can be, you know, because you're one of the biggest bodies and you need to try and be a rebounder. And that's what we're going to try and get out of you at a VJBL level if you want to try and make state team. So that's what we did. And obviously he made the state team, and that was his role on the state team. So a little bit different as you get older, but I would go more position based, not necessarily individual based in those younger age groups.
Yeah, like you're the sixth man, you'll be coming off the bench. Like, you don't want to go down that path with kids. Like, it gives them unrealistic, I suppose, expectations is probably the wrong word, but, you know, what if they're not the sixth man for more than 5 weeks and then all of a sudden they're a starter? Or what if they fall down the rotation a little bit longer as well?
Yeah. So I'd be more like, this is what we need from our wings. This is what we need from... Yeah, that's how I would approach it.
Yep. What about you, Coops? Any different?
No, I'd be the same. It'd be more broad, roles and responsibilities based on position, point guard, post. And then probably the only thing I would build on that would be, again, a broad philosophy around shot quality. So again, you know, as you go higher, you would have those individual conversations around what's a good shot for that particular person and where it may come from on the floor and in the shot clock. Whereas with those younger teams, or even second and third teams, you know, what does a good shot look like? You know, what does a bad shot look like? How does it impact what we're trying to do? So and I think what we're both saying there is important, because you're laying a foundation for those more specific conversations later on. So they're getting an introduction to what you know, what elite basketball is going to be and how the individual role is going to associate with that.
Yep. So you've been in a position where you've coached a number of state teams, Coops, and been involved with them. How do you build team cohesion early on? So you've all been thrown into this thing and it's like, best of luck, away you go. How do you get them actually, not necessarily liking each other, because that'll come with time, obviously, but how do you get them to look like a team early on?
Yeah, the culture piece is really big. You know, I've made the mistake in multiple teams of hoping that the culture would just, you know, kind of manufacture itself and be like, oh, we've got some really good guys, you know, that they'll get along and the culture will come, and then, you know, all of a sudden we lose a couple of games and there's infighting and we're trying to solve it later. So for me, it's having a culture plan. So one of the things I started putting together was a culture calendar. So looking at, you know, days and events that would fit into what we were doing on the court to help the guys come together. You know, state teams probably a little bit easier maybe than junior teams, in the fact that we can use. So one of the values we have here in our program is honor, because we have so many unbelievable people that have come before us. You know, we're sitting here in the gaze room, you know, so you make
roasting
in the gaze room. That's right. So, you know, you put a state uniform on and you're immediately in the same family as one of the greatest basketball players of all time that, you know, that's come from our city and our state. And, you know, those sorts of things are really cool if you take the time to think about them and have some activities that help the players really draw the line from them to someone like Drewy. And then the other, there's some really cool, you know, getting to know your games. There's some fun activities that you can do. So, you know, and those things come from all sorts of resources that I know you have and I have and Darren and a lot of our other colleagues have, that if coaches want, they can reach out. But for me, it's about the time. It's about creating that calendar. It's about putting those events together and really trying to have it be a hands-on aspect. I think it's a John Gordon quote where he says, culture's like a tree, you know, it takes years to grow, but can be cut down in a minute. So, you know, trying to have that mindset about it.
Yep. Hey, what would you do, Bestie, in that space? Like, you're in a position where you're about to coach a state team this year with the under 2018. How are you planning on going about that? Knowing that, I mean, we've spoken a little bit before about the under 20s, which is such a difficult process to get involved, because you get drawn up, you get drawn down, then you've got to try and pick your team in there too.
Yeah, well, I think it's about with the older kids, we often talk about having them part of the process. So they need to be able to identify what's important to them and what they want to achieve, and then how we go about it together. And that sort of starts to shape the identity of the group. So if we want to, you know, be the best rebounding team, for example, you know, how do we do that, and how are we going to budget our time towards that, and then the accountability from peer to peer around those types of things. So that starts to build a bit of culture. Obviously, with any of the state team stuff, we, like Coop said, you know, it's about the program, it's not about the individual, and that makes it easier. But with the junior teams, you know, when I first came back to Victoria, the Australia Day tournament was a little bit of a bone of contention for me with just the timing of it. And, you know, I often said, you know, there's too many games. I would rather, this is the coach, I would rather we just had a couple more practice games and we could get on the court and practice, right? Which is what every coach says. But the non-tangible point of that was the teams became so much closer, particularly the younger ones, where the parents are like, oh, I've got a pool, everyone can come back to our place, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Or we're going to the beach and we're doing all this. And it sort of took away from me wanting to be, you know, elite, you know, like, no, they should be doing film, you know, all this type of stuff. But definitely with the younger kids, that really helped. And a lot of coaches single that tournament out as a time where they really galvanize and, you know, they got to know each other a little bit more, because between now and when that comes, it's pretty much, all right, trials, a stressful environment. Then it's like back into grading, it's a stressful environment, you know, and then they get to let their hair down a little bit in the Australia Day tournament. So that can help. And so much so that considering doing something similar with my youth league team, you know, around some time away in a tournament, or, you know, even if it's just like a camp, overnight camp or something like that.
Yep. I know we didn't play the Australia Day tournament this year, and we were going to go away to Shep, because that's where one of our players that was travelling down to Metro came from. So we were planning on doing that weekend away. And then we had COVID that just ripped through everyone in Victoria in that sort of January period and had to cancel. And to be honest, looking back, that's probably, I don't want to say it's the reason we weren't as successful, but it was a real issue, because we planned on doing a lot of team building stuff, a lot of getting to know each other a little bit better type stuff. But it's that time off court that is just as valuable as the time on court. And I mean, you potentially don't need to do it during a tournament weekend. It's a great time to do it, but you could even just say, look, we're training from 8 till 9:30 on this Sunday morning. At 10 o'clock, we're all meeting at this certain place for a barbecue, or whatever the case may be. Like, it's a great opportunity for parents to get to know each other, which matters, because they're going to have to deal with each other for the next 12 months. You're going to be relying on carpools and can you help with this and that sort of stuff. So it's a good way for them to get to know each other, but for the kids to just be idiots for a little while as well, where they can run around and just be kids and not have to worry about all the other stuff. So there's the really designed practice that we were talking about before, Coops, where, you know, we do this team building activity and that will lead to this. But then there's the informal stuff, which I think is just as valuable in that space. I was watching, it was a little YouTube clip this morning on Manchester City. We're going through, like, they're having a bit of a down training time at the moment. So they've already got their seasons up and running. They've got Champions League. They've got their actual season going and all that sort of stuff at the same time. So they had a light session and it was literally just games, and none of it was soccer related. It was all the stuff, like, they were doing some stretching, some warm up. And then one of the coaches would say, like, three. And you had to get in groups of three pretty quickly. And it was just that whole mucking around, like trying to grab and hold people to say, no, you're in my group of three, don't go to that one. And if you were the odd one out, you had to do some stupid penalty. Like the ones where they'd face each other, they'd have some cones on the bench. You know, when they say, you know, green cone, you had to pick up the green one. If they said both, you had to get both, that sort of stuff. But that can be really helpful to build just that little bit of competitiveness too. And you get to find a little bit about your team, like which kid is super competitive that is like, no, I am winning this. I don't care that it's informal and it doesn't matter as much. I want to win this, but you also get to find out which ones are good teammates and are able to sort of pick others up that have potentially lost. So I think there's a lot you can do that is not necessarily the on-court stuff, but just to build a little bit of sort of teamwork in that space. And it's not easy to do, and it's probably not the stuff that we all enjoy as coaches, that, you know, I'm going to sacrifice a little bit of my training time. Well, you can do it before training. You can do it after training. You can say, look, we are training for 90 minutes, but we're going to be here for 2 hours anyway, just to get this stuff done. So I think there is some stuff that we can do there as coaches.
Yeah, definitely. That's the big one. I've gone through that recently, like my last 2 years in NBL 1. We didn't have a roster that was going to be able to compete in that league on talent. And I made a big mistake in the fact that I thought, no, we've got to have more on-court time. We've got to use every on-court minute available to work on the basketball. But obviously it was hard to get the guys together outside those training times. So I didn't sacrifice any training time for culture activities, and it hurt us. And it hurt us. And so that was a big learning one for me. So I think you're spot on there.
So you got to find out what your players want, as we spoke. Like we spoke about the cohesion. So again, Rob that learned how to use Google Sheets as survey tools this year. Yet another survey out to my playing group this year. But it was all about, you know, who are you as a player? And I know Julia Walsh spoke about this last year when she was on the podcast as well. She spoke about, you know, who are you away from basketball? Finding out those types of things, finding out who their favourite players are, finding out what they actually want out of the year. What position do you play? Tell me about your best game. Tell me about your worst game. Finding out a little bit more. And one I stole from you too, Coops, like describe your playing style with an emoji. Like that one was real interesting. Like when we throw that out there and some kids came back with like one emoji, some came back with like 15, and it's like, yeah, no kidding. Like we've seen this go south before. So those types of things are, I think, are a great way to start to just find out what their expectations are coming in so that you can match that as well, because really it's not about us as coaches, shockingly. It is about the athletes as players. And if what we expect from them does not marry up with what they expect from the season is going to look like, there's just going to be discontent. It's going to be frustrating for everyone involved. So I think the more that you can get to know your athletes in that space as a coach, and that might be, like I think you spoke about it, Bestie, like setting aside some time in your training sessions, just have a quick chat on the little drive-by. It's like, hey, how are you going with this? Good, yeah, excellent, and away you go. And it's just a little bit of a check-in, just build a little bit of a connection with your athletes, I think is a great way to do it. Is there anything else you've done in that? Bestie?
More just obviously when I was with Casey, I just came out of the HP pathway working with BTAS, but I wanted to make it known to the players what was available to them if they were to progress. And I would often say to the kids, you know, are you aware there's an under 15 Australian team? No. You know, this is possible for you, you know, and obviously we've got a great Victorian representation in that current group of under 15 Australian players. But, you know, quite a lot of kids coming into under 14s wouldn't even be on their radar. So I think starting to sell some of those dreams around, you know, what's important to you and what is possible. Because like you said before, it's a ones team or nothing. Yeah. So they're the kids that I've got, right? Of course not. But it's those same things, you know, like some of those kids aren't even aware, you know, it might be their first year of rep and they're aware that they're not even aware there's divisions. You know, they're not aware that there's an FDP or there's an SDP or there's this or that. So trying to sell them that, and then hopefully they're the types of things they want, which can shape those conversations around what you're doing with them.
Yes, it's kind of building on what you both are talking about, and something I picked up just from some sports psychology research is motivational interviewing. So when we're talking about external motivation and intrinsic motivation, creating the intrinsic by having the discussions that you guys are actually talking about. You know, who are you? Where do you want to go? Do you know what's available to you? Okay, cool. You know, how do you want to get there? What are some things that you're identified in yourself that's going to help you get there? And then so they're now developing self-awareness around, you know, where they want to go and what it's going to take. And then importantly, later on, if that kid starts, you know, maybe showing up late or not giving you full effort on the floor, you have the opportunity to go back to that moment and say, hey, you know, Johnny, you said you wanted to make the under 15 Australian team. Are you giving us the effort that you identified in that interview that aligns with going, oh, no, coach, well, you know, and then all of a sudden, instead of putting them on the line and running them, you know, you're getting that sort of that moment internally of, oh, I better shape up, rather than more of that external maybe stick or carrot moment.
Yeah, and like, who wants to play in the NBL? All their hands go up. You know, who wants to this, that? And it's like, okay, well, do your habits match your goals?
Yeah, great point.
Do your habits match your goals?
Yep. All right, so we're getting on court. Coops, offense or defense first?
Yeah, it's such a strange one because I keep going back and forth on this. So for me, I probably – going back to, again, my most recent coaching around NBL1 and under 20s team. So probably a little bit niche in that respect. But I would normally go offense, because I definitely am an offensive minded coach and I love the intricacies of offense and being innovative and creative, and probably a little bit too much at times, as best you would know from our last 20s campaign. But I'm now at the point of defense because if I just think if you can nail it down and you can establish it, it's going to obviously help you in the long run in terms of just being a good, you know, gritty, hard-nosed defensive team. But then obviously, you know, the better you are defensively, the more it's going to help you offensively in terms of practice, where you want to keep having, you know, the defense challenge of the O challenge of the D, and that's how you keep growing. I don't think there's right and wrong. I don't know if that's where I'll be in another year's time, but just based on the most recent experiences I've had, I think I would start with trying to establish the most hard-nosed, physical, disruptive defense that I could, and then build my super funky fun offense after that.
Bestie, offense or defense first?
If I'm doing a junior VJBL team, we talked about this off air. Sadly, we have to put time into press break. You know, so that's offense, I would say. Or press attack is probably a good way to talk about it, maybe not press break. Because until we can get out of that, that won't, you know, stop our – or that will continue to stop our game from developing in the younger age group. So we really put an emphasis on it at Casey early on in being well drilled in our press attack or press break, and it resulted in us grading better. So that would probably be one of the things I would be focusing on. But once again, there's value in having club-wide stuff, which we've spoke about before. So if kids are in their second or third year of the program and the press break, for example, is club-wide, there's less time you need to spend on it. You just need to make sure that you're well-versed in it, because unfortunately you can be in that game in your grading pool where you're playing the team that's got a similar ranking to you, and someone slaps a press on and goes on a quick 6-0 or 8-0 run, and that can either knock you out or put you in a really difficult crossover. So hopefully that's, you know, some of this has been addressed in the under-12s with a size 5 ball, which is great.
Yeah.
And obviously, as you know, when you get older in 16s and 18s, you should be able to, you know, one lag pass and you should be able to throw it diagonally down the court, no problem. But, you know, being versed in that is probably something I would do. But once again, how does that then translate into your half court stuff? And we're probably getting a little off topic here, because you want to make sure that the two are connected and not two different things. So I would be working on that. And difficult, or what I will say is difficult to practice a press break if you are not pressing as well as a team. So we had to get creative, because we didn't do that at Casey. We didn't zone press until under 16s at all. Weren't allowed to do it. And even still, there was some rules around when and how often and all that. But you really got to get creative with how you practice that, because obviously getting under 12s and under 14 kids just to do a press break on zero is you know, you need to spend a little bit of time doing that, but predominantly you need to break it down into short games with maybe overloading the court and, you know, passing games and those types of things. So it becomes sort of habit.
Yep. So what I heard out of that is defense first, because otherwise you can't practice your press break. So I like where you're going with
that. Yeah, you've got to spend the first 5 hours putting your arrow press in, arrow press in, and then do not do that.
No, please don't do that. It is an issue in that space as well. Like, I know from my experience as well, press break has been the first offensive stuff we've ever touched on. Like, it's with any team I've ever had, is you need that in place, because that, and to be fair, you don't even need to be playing against a team that runs a really well-structured defensive press. It just might be something different that they haven't seen, because you've got a new team. There isn't that cohesion around, oh, I know that player will bust to the middle, or I know that player will be my reversal pass. They just don't have that yet. So like a little 1-2-2 delay press during grading can cause you all sorts of chaos on the offensive end. So I think the press break stuff, like that, that's really valuable. I think the under 12s, in particular, the full court press stuff, that's where I find a lot of it sort of breaks down. 16s and 18s, it's more that delay press where they'll sort of pick you up just over half court, sort of trap that first pass as it gets over, those types of things. So the differentials between that, making sure you've got something that does align though. Like, you don't want to have one press break for a full court press, a different press break for a half court press. And then, of course, the ever-impending zone press that is coming in the quarter court. And let's face it, I mean, you touched on it, Bestie, that you're going to get zoned in grading. Like, it is going to happen. And just the importance of having an offensive system, I think, that can be used for man and zone. Like, for this last year, we finished our trials, I think, on the Sunday letters of offer went out on the Monday or Tuesday or something along those lines. We played our first practice game Friday before we'd even had a chance to train.
Whoa.
It's like that was a quick turnaround. So from that end, it was, what the heck are we doing? We needed to put something in at trials because we knew that was coming that could actually be used in that space. But I think for the first four possessions, I think we scored the first four possessions, then we got zoned for the next 38 minutes and 10 seconds. And it's like, well, this is fantastic. This is not, you know, anything helpful from our space. But it is one of those areas where don't forget the zone, like, because you will be zoned. 12s and 14s, obviously you won't, but 16s and 18s, you have to have something against the zone. So, I mean, what would you do in a quick turnaround type space, Goose? Would you just go something really basic like a high-low action, or would you do something different?
Yeah, just pinning that and just coming back to what you're talking about, having something for man in zone two, I think is really important for your out-of-bounds package. Yeah, especially when you're talking about youth basketball, keep it simple. The priority one for an out-of-bounds package is get the ball in.
Get it in.
Just get the ball in, and if you can have the same alignment, the same movement versus man or zone, that you're kicking goals, because now you've got something simple, you know the ball's coming in, you can spend limited time on it, invest in time in all the other stuff, the fun stuff. So I think that's just something that's important to you know, resonate with coaches. Yeah, for me, I've spent some time recently, I developed a new zone offense that Darren helped me with that we put in with our under-20s, that again was designed to be similar alignment, similar movement, and have the ability to work against man and zone. And it revolved heavily around off-ball movement. So if we could come back to, so we have some non-negotiables in our program that we aligned with our under-20s. And so our offensive non-negotiables are four-point line spacing, ball and player movement, and scanning for effective decisions. So when structuring that zone offense that we knew could work against a man as well, those three things needed to be in it. And we found something that gave us some success. So, you know, that was good for us. And then the challenge to coaches is, you know, go and have fun doing that. You know, sit down with a pen and paper or fast draw or whatever it may be and start thinking about the game. Where would the defense move if the ball was here? How could we then create space or, you know, a double gap for a drive or whatever it may be? So, yeah, don't shy away from that and add more sets and more things. You know, get out of your comfort zone and see what you can create.
Yeah, so 15 half-court offenses before Christmas, not necessarily the way to go, you're telling us.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, it is that tough part because everyone's in the same boat where they're trying to grade. So it's front of mind, I think, with a lot of people that, oh, maybe if I just put this wrinkle in and I'll just put that wrinkle in and I'll just put that wrinkle in. Like, yeah, but then you got a whole new offense.
Right.
And it's not really relevant to you. So I think, like, that before Christmas party is really just get some things in that you know will still be there in 12 months' time. Like, you don't want to have to reinvent every 3 to 4 weeks a new set to deal with a new situation. Have something that can almost be your base and then build out from that. But as long as your base can get you through to Christmas, you're going to be in an okay spot. And I mean, you guys did a fair bit of that with Casey.
Well, the first thing I would be, I'm not going to ask you who that practice game was against, but I would not schedule them again for the next year. You know, like, that is not a good relationship that you want. It's not getting anyone better. And whoever that, you know, that's not a good situation. So we had, at Casey, we had some great relationships with a few clubs that we would practice every year. As the club got stronger, we started to try and pick some high-level teams and all those types of things to play against. And we had some very good arrangements with some of those clubs around, you know, like, what are we trying to get out of it? 1 year the boys will be at Casey, the next year the girls will be at Casey, you know, those types of things. So to hear that is quite disappointing. I had to just circle back to that. Don't be that coach. You know, you need to have a conversation with the coach around what are you trying to get out of it, because it is a practice game for that reason. And I've kind of, it's really worked me out with that actually. So what was the question? Sorry.
You're right. So how important is it to have like some offensive structure in that's going to be there over the course of your season rather than just a quick hit for pre-Christmas?
Yeah, you need one or two things and just be really good at them early on. Once again, coming from a club-wide structure, hopefully there's some carry-on from the year previous. And same as with your end and side out of bounds, you know, somewhere between 4% and 6% of scores at tournaments that matter. We know under 12s, the screener is, you know, it's probably results in about 70% of scores in under 12s. Yeah. We get
80% of missed layups.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Or bailout foul calls. Yeah. But I think Yeah, budget time, make sure whatever it does carry over. You know, when I was heavily invested in flow, I tried to have some similar principles with the post. One lifts, one goes down, so some high-low stuff. You know, if you're on the wing, you're a cutter, those types of things. So it's similar sort of actions. So it does go together. And obviously it's dependent on, you know, what you're preparing for and how much time you have. But I would, you know, obviously, thankfully, we don't have to worry about it in 12s and 14s. But clearly from what you've said, you've got to spend a bit of time on it, Rob.
Yep, no question. So when you're looking defensively, what would you be trying to get in before Christmas? So we'll say 12s and 14s will probably sit a little bit differently to 16s, 18s, just purely because of the zone stuff. Bestie, what would you get in first from a defensive perspective that you would worry about?
Well, it's obviously guarding the ball, you know, so you can always have an element of your closeouts and how you want to close out to the ball, you know, where are your push points on the floor when we're talking man-to-man. What is your help and rotation responsibility is important. You know, what sort of concept are you going with? Are you a rover and crack down guy? Are you a peel switch guy? Like, what are you, a pack guy? Are you a denial, whatever it is, or girl coach? So have those things in place and not necessarily, I probably wouldn't be guarding actions just yet. But once again, you get with the older age groups, you probably work a little bit of that into your shell. So maybe it's one or two side pick and roll coverages. In Victoria, you'd have to talk about defending a staggered double. You know, I think that is a staple of most offenses. So have a way to guard it. And then maybe a cross screen too. I think having coaching under 18s for a while, the cross screen, we talked about defending that through grading.
Yep.
Just a way to do that.
Yep. What about you, Coops?
Yeah, I mean, the two hardest things to teach and the two hardest things to execute defensively is the 1v1 contest and then D-trans. And probably two of the things that aren't sexy and we don't spend enough time in. So definitely laying those two things down, you know, with a base. You know, it starts with, you know, what are your offensive rebounding rules? How does that then flow into your D-trans rules? And then how does that flow back into, you know, your contain, contest, you know, half-court man that Bestie's talking about. So I think those two things are important. I think the other one too is switching. However you feel about switching, the modern game is heavily, you know, revolving around switching right now. But importantly, there's a time and a place for it, especially late game, you know, where you're probably going to want to have some understanding of how to switch. And then importantly, you're going to see a lot of switching, you know, when it comes back to offense. See, I told you I was an offensive coach. I found a way to get back there. So if you are doing, you know, if you are working on some switching and that becomes a part of kind of your repertoire, then you are going to give your offense a few more reps in understanding how to beat it. So I think they're definitely the places to start. That 1v1 contest, D-trans, and then, you know, just some basic concepts.
And, I mean, you've both kind of hit it on it at the same time. Like, the important part is with the switching, every player needs to know where the push points are, for example. Like, it can't just be a case of when the guard comes and gets his closeout, this is where we're sending it, but the big never knows. If you're going to switch late clock, that big needs to know I'm sending it over the elbow, below the whatever the case may be. So it's really important to have that across the board, I think, more than anything else, because it's not unique to just one player. It is your whole team has to be across that. And, you know, I've been in some programs where they've literally given, like, quizzes to kids about where are we sending the ball when it's here, where are we sending it when it's here. And it's like, yeah, okay, look, it's a lot, but, you know, you knew at the end of it if they knew what they were talking about or if they could understand it as well.
Well, I think Ash at one point had sent me a copy of a, I don't know if you guys saw it, but I think it was a Polish junior national team scouting report. Yep. And it was quiz-based and they had to fill it out and even at some point draw one of their sets, and then there was some questions around. And I really liked that.
Yep. Oh, I did see that one and it was fantastic. And I mean, you get caught as to how much is too much too. Like, I know our first grading phase, so the November-December period this last year, I think we won our first game, we lost our second game, and we lost our third game. So that third game was a fairly important one for us because obviously if we won that, we would be going through to VC before Christmas. So we actually did a scouting report for the kids and it freaked them the hell out. Like, it was just too much information. Like, they got some film, they got some written scout notes as well, and it was just too much. They hadn't seen it before. and I've dropped it on them in probably the most important game of grading. Solid coaching work once again, Rob. But it did. It just messed with them. Like, they were overthinking everything. They didn't play on instinct anymore. They were trying to do the right thing, but it just didn't work in that space. So you do have to be a little bit careful as to how much you give them in that space.
So in those three first grading games, yep, what percentage of zone did you face?
So game one was maybe a quarter. Game two was actually straight man. Game three was straight man. Like, funnily enough.
So once again, that practice game really helped you.
Yeah, really did nothing for us. But to be fair, we were one of those teams that you probably could play straight up. Like, we weren't one of those top four teams where you sit there and say, look, we're going to need to try and stifle it a little bit and try and zone it a little bit. We weren't one of those types of teams.
Sure. So
you did have the ability to play us straight up, and you'd probably be okay more often than not, I suppose, in that space.
But now, the point that you're making about simplifying, about, you know, creating digestible information, you know, remembering that it's not about what we know as coaches. It's not an exercise in, you know, who's the smartest coach. It's what they can execute. And so we've got to keep coming back to that. And Bestie, through his research of, you know, the Sydney Kings, he's the one that brought the emoji stuff to me and our state team staff. And it was revolutionary for us, really. It was a great way for us to condense a lot of information into, you know, into a generation that talks in images. And so, you know, what ways can you condense all the information that we're talking about? Not necessarily a scouting report. Like, what are some other ways that you can condense this thing? You know, can you use 3 words instead of 10 words to just try and help the athletes execute the way in which you want them to? Because, you know, at the end of the day, we can't get frustrated with them if we're not helping them in that space.
Mm. We had our state team staff technical meeting last weekend, or the weekend before, was it?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
For the first time in a while, obviously, because of COVID interruptions, it was good to get everybody together, including managers. And we did some workshops around things that you should say to athletes and things you shouldn't say to athletes and all these types of things, which was very beneficial. But the biggest one that came out of it for me was relevancy. You know, so what you're saying, is it relevant to the age group? You know, the back in my day or this or that, you know, or this particular player. You know, some of those kids don't know who that is. So the emoji stuff for us was relevant because that's how these kids are talking.
Yeah.
I think we've had full conversations in Ted Lasso GIFs, Simpsons GIFs, and Family Guy GIFs. Like, it went on for a while. But again, that's easily digestible. You can get it along, you know, move the conversation along, I feel, like with just some images. So I think it's a good way to do it. Last bit before we wrap this thing up. How do you coach that first game, Coops? Like, you've just picked your team, you've maybe had one training session, you're on court for the first time. Are you rolling the balls out and just seeing what happens, or are you into it and trying to fix it?
Yeah, I'm trying to identify no more than 3 things that we're taking into that game from a development standpoint. And from the coaching side, the idea is that, you know, if we do hit those 3 things, probably going to give us more chance for success, but not necessarily putting that on the athletes. Like, want to come out into that game playing loose, you know, still in a kind of a development understanding, knowing that there's high pressure, it's grading. Like, we want to win every game. We want to play VC or the highest grade available to us. But, you know, we don't want to start this thing off with tight shoulders and stress and all those sorts of things. So for me, it's, yeah, can I find 3 things from that preseason or pre-grading that I know that we want to be really proficient at, that we want to get better at in over the span of the year, and then knowing just from a coaching standpoint that those 3 things are going to, you know, they're probably going to help us win the game, you know, without putting that pressure. Oh, guys, first grading game, we have to, you know, all those sorts of things.
It would it change if it was just a normal practice game? Like you spoke about before, Bestie, scheduling games against other clubs. How would you coach those ones?
Well, once again, it goes back to what we talked about in our culture stuff around the identity of our team. So that would help you phrase some of your, I guess, timeouts or halftime or quarter time addresses around identity pieces, which is, you know, Coops has touched on it before around how closely today's generation identifies their, I guess, their value with performance. So, you know, and that's a whole nother topic of whether, you know, that's appropriate or not. Mm. But the fact is they are. And if they are, we said we're going to be this type of team, then you can lead your discussions and points of emphasis in your timeouts around those things which hopefully is building towards your end goal, I guess. So that's sort of how I would approach it. I wouldn't be necessary if it's a practice game. I wouldn't be concerned about the result at all. I would say, you know, we said we want to be the best rebounding team, for example. That's what I used before. So we're going to make sure we're holding you accountable on your blockouts, and you guys are holding each other accountable on those types of things. And then grade it at the end. You know, how did we go on it? Great. You know, what's next for us?
Yep. So the review part's vital.
Yeah.
Like they really need to be. Like, if you're going to value something before a game, you have the game, you have to revisit that thing afterwards. Otherwise, yeah, it's just words. So please, coaches, if you are going to write down and say, look, we're going to be a rebounding team, a good perimeter shooting team, you need to have some data that's going to come back to them that's going to verify that.
Well, it's like saying it in your coaching interview, right? We're going to be this. Yeah. We're going to be that. You know, okay, how? Yeah, how are you going to do this?
Yeah, 100%. And then the other part is peer-to-peer. You know, Bessie touched on this earlier. You know, we talk about leadership, we talk about creating leaders, you know, we talk about creating problem solvers, but are we really doing that? If we're just spewing information at them constantly and it's one voice, well, then we can't complain that we're not creating leaders because we're not giving them the opportunity. So I think especially in those practice games, you know, can you get the players to be more involved? You know, can they take a timeout or, you know, have some responsibilities on the bench about holding one another accountable? And then especially the review portion should be 90% player to player or player led, and then maybe you just facilitate, and then you can take away whatever data you can from that. But let's really invest in the athletes and helping them in that space, because that's, you know, as we know, what, you know, another quote is, a player led team is always going to beat a coach led team.
Like it. Coaches, that does wrap us up for today. Hopefully that's all of use to you as you're going through this at various levels and across the country in this space. Have had some great feedback from a lot of coaches in other states, ironically enough, saying, look, we still listen to the podcast, whilst it's not VJBL-centric, and shockingly, the world does not revolve around the VJBL, but they still listen to it and they still apply it for their coaching. So, coaches, if there are any topics that you wanted to discuss over the course, please do reach out as best you can, and we'll have a mailbag in probably a few weeks' time as well, where we'll open it up to everyone that can ask any question they want to come in, and we'll go from that stage too. So, coaches, good luck with your coaching now that you are picking teams and navigating this entertaining time of year, if nothing else. Coops and Bestie, thanks you both for jumping in. Coaches, we will catch you guys next week on the podcast. Love. Tune in and join the tribe.